This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. The topic of this prayer treatment is mind, omnipresent, with every idea in place. There are 61 words that Mary Baker Eddy uses to describe the definition of mind. I shall read the list. Action, all, ability, apprehend, all faculty, author, basis, comprehend, cause, controls, create, creative ability, desire, delivers, directs, discovers, dominion, expresses, emanates, first, forces, forms, faculties, guides, govern, heals, image, idea, immortal, immortality, includes, influence, intelligence, intuition, knows, law, leads, light, mandate, manifests, makes, medicine, metaphysics, multiplies, might, origin, one, parent mind, perfect, power, presents, produces, perception, revelation, reveals, science, that's a capital S, supreme, source, thought, wisdom, will. Those were a total of 61 terms. There are 16 terms that are used for opposites. They are as follows: accident, brain, belief, darkness, heredity, hypnotism, ignorance, illusion, limits, materia medica, matter, MMP, which stands for malicious malpractice, mesmerism, minds many, mortal, nerve. Now, which terms may apply directly to our title, which again is omnipresence, idea in place? Mind is listed as the first of the seven synonymous terms because that is the one that indicates development, the first step in the development of any idea has to be getting the idea, being enlightened in order to get the idea, and it turns on the light so we can see everything else that functions that could be related to the topic. Let's turn on the light of mind and look at the six items, which is the five that were mentioned, plus the alternate one on who man is, which is Genesis chapter 2. Why is it important to understand Genesis chapter 2 if that is the false record of creation? Because whatever it says, it's the opposite of what chapter 1, verse 26 and 27 says. Genesis chapter 2 is really the expansion of just that one verse of Genesis chapter 1. So, what does Genesis chapter 1 say? It says that God said, "Let us make man in our image and after our likeness." And the following verse, 27, says, "And so God made man in his image and after his likeness." Mary Baker Eddy explains in chapter 15, which is the first chapter of the second part of the textbook, and it's entitled exactly what the chapter, first chapter of the Bible is, Genesis. The whole chapter 15 is on the key points that are in the book of Genesis. And what does it say about the very first sentence or the very first phrase of Genesis chapter 1, where it says, in the beginning, God created, and then it goes on and gives us 6 days of creation. If we look further into the Bible, a little deeper, it says about truth, it says there is nothing new under the sun. So is there a point where God could have created anything? No. God revealed the full development within thought of discovering the truth about everything that always did exist. And that's exactly what this is all about. It's not telling us about creation because the Bible says there's nothing new under the sun. It is telling us about revelation. And what does verse 26 say? And so God said, let us make man in our image and likeness. We have to do some letting. We have to open up consciousness to the truth. Mary Baker Eddy says the us refers to life, truth, and love. What is life, truth, and love? Life is living the qualities of God. Truth is staying on track. So once we know the truth, we have to stay on track. And love is an atmosphere that surrounds everything, wherein we are nurturing all the qualities of God within consciousness. That is love. It's a mother. A mother nurtures its babes to bring it to fulfillment. And that, of course, is what love is. Once it has nurtured everything, it is fulfillment. It is completeness. Nothing missing. As a refresher, let's take a look at these dates of each of the things that we mentioned before that we said line up in 7 key points, all in the same order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The oldest one is the false record of creation. And that was discovered in 950 BC. The second one is the first record of creation, the spiritual one, and that is 400 to 500 years later at 550 to 450 BC. Now we say those backwards because we say it in the order of the calendar, because this is BC. If it were AD, we would say 450 to 550, but it is BC, which means that it is getting closer and closer to our current year. So, Genesis, with the spiritual record of creation, came from a document that is 400 years newer than the spiritual record of creation. But the hand of God must have been having a play in this, and therefore in the Bible, put the spiritual record of creation first, even though it wasn't discovered until 400 to 500 years later than the old false record of creation. The churches historically accept the false record as the real record, because they pass on the garbage that we are all born a sinner, because we're born in the lineage of Adam and Eve. And if in fact we were born in the lineage of Adam and Eve, we would be born a sinner. But we don't believe that in Christian Science. We believe what Habakkuk tells us, and that is that God is of purer eyes than to even behold evil. So how could we be born of evil? Jesus, according to Mary Baker Eddy, was the best man that ever trod the globe. Now, he couldn't have that kind of a category from a woman as spiritual as Mary Baker Eddy and think of God as being evil. Because he never, ever mentioned a God of evil. He claimed that God was perfect because he stated that man was made in his image and likeness, and he proved it with every single healing. God could not have been an evil God, otherwise he couldn't have had a single healing, because he was looking to God for the truth about everybody that he met that needed to be healed. So we know that God had his hand in arranging the books of the Bible. Guess what came before the record of creation and before the record of the false theory of creation? The Ten Commandments. They are shown as being 1491 B.C. 1491. So there are 500 and, 40 years prior to the false record of creation. That must have given the population time to totally violate the Ten Commandments. They must have totally violated it. And then we get out of the Old Testament, once we have the true and the false record of creation and the Ten Commandments, and the next thing is the New Testament, the Sermon on the Mount. And that, as well as the Lord's Prayer, was the same year, and it shows as being 27 A.D. Now, I'm not sure what's going on here, because I haven't researched it. This is just new information, and we're still working with it and doing research. But Jesus was supposed to be not available to be on his own until age 30. What was the genius that put this all together? Mary Baker Eddy. Because she gave us the definition of God. And it lines up perfectly with these other paragraphs, other records that were referred to. So, the first record in Genesis 1, the third one, which is the Ten Commandments, in fact, that was the first. So the Ten Commandments, and then the record of creation, then the Sermon on the Mount, and the Lord's Prayer, which were the same year. And so when she gave us the definition of God on page 465, she stated that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite, and then the seven synonymous terms in the same order as all of these other things referred to, except the false record of creation, the theory. And that's only focusing on one of the verses, which is verse 6, about man. So let's look at what we just said. Incorporeal. God is not a body. It's very common to think that Jesus is God. How could anybody think that way? Jesus was born as a baby inside a woman's womb for 9 months and then went through the normal childhood year after year after year until he finally became 30 years old. That doesn't sound like God to me. That doesn't sound like incorporeal to me. He had a body with bodily functions. He ate. He drank. He walked. You could touch him. His feet got dirty. That's why Mary Magdalene washed his feet. No, he couldn't be God. But that's other people to discover on their own. We must not criticize others. Everyone needs to work out their own salvation. But the Christian Science viewpoint is that's impossible. And what happened when a Pharisee who had lots of money and wanted to keep it forever, he asked Jesus how to obtain eternal life. He said, "Good Master, how can I obtain eternal life?" And what did Jesus answer? How did he respond? He said, "Why call thou me good?" You know, he said, "Good Master. Why call thou me good? There's only one good, and that is God." Does that sound like Jesus could be God? He himself says he is not God. There's only one God, and that's the same God that he defers to when he says, like when the blind man was apparently born blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Who did sin, this man or his parents?" Now, how they could figure that a newborn babe could have sinned already just because he was born blind, I have no idea. There are so many illogical things in the Bible. If we read them with any common sense at all, we're going to have to throw them out because they're the false record. So Jesus said, "Neither did this man sin, nor did his parents, but that we are here being presented for this situation to heal it so that we can glorify God." So he's taking it at the present moment and saying, okay, what is he going to do with it? He's going to glorify God by healing it, by proving that God is truth, and the truth never quits. It's always there to be able to be a healer. And if we will let ourselves be an avenue for truth to pass through us, reflect it, then we will be able to benefit from that power of truth and heal. And that's exactly what Jesus did. So that's incorporeal. How about divine? Have you ever thought of something that was absolutely perfect and said, "Wow, that is divine"? I've done that. I've heard other people say that about a variety of things. It's common used in food, if it is just absolutely a perfect taste for the individual. Wow, that is divine. But it can be anything. A beautiful scenery. Anything at all that is perfect to our best estimate. That's divine. So let's think of perfection. How about supreme? We've all thought of supreme as being the best there is. Doesn't matter what the category is, it is the best. There is nothing greater than that. Well, that's how she defines God. Nothing greater than God. It is the apex of everything that is in existence, that is real. And the fourth one, what do you think that is? Infinite. Doesn't that pretty much wrap it up? Incorporeal, divine, supreme, and then infinite. It doesn't stop. It goes on forever. It has no limit in any direction. It is absolutely infinite. No interruption. So then all we really have to do is to channel our thought into what those four mean. And then we clear the path to understand the seven. So is God incorporeal? Certainly doesn't say anything different in the Bible, in the real record of creation, in the real record of things that Jesus said, and other advanced students of the Bible. You know, we had ascensions in the Bible. Jesus wasn't the only one. No one found a body for John after he finished the book on Revelation. And by that, by the way, that was with Jesus. Jesus, after ascending, came back on earth and met with John on the island of Patmos. On the island of Patmos, they met and wrapped out, finished, from beginning to end, the book of Revelation, the Apocalypse. So what's the very first one that these four words refer to? What is the most unlimited thing you can think of, even on a human scale? Can anyone limit our imagination? That's mind. Except mind is fact. But we can instantly think that we're one place and then in the next instant we're somewhere totally different. Mind has no limits whatsoever. Anything to do with thinking, anything to do with the mental, is mind. So how about the second one? Spirit. Spirit is substance. It's defined as being flawless and transparent and therefore reflective. What do we need to do next? We have to have something to work with. Aren't we going to have to identify? We have to identify what it is that's going to be the topic. And that is soul. All of our senses. Seeing, hearing, feeling, smell, and taste. And they have to be made up of what? Matter? Or the only real substance, which is spirit? Well, I gave you the answer. They have to be made up of spirit. Forget about wasting time on matter. Jesus had infinite supply of everything he needed, when he needed it. Can you do that with matter? No, I don't think so. And what did the children of Israel have to learn when they were going through the desert? To depend on who? For their every drop of drink and kernel of what they ate. It's all from God. They had to learn to depend on God for their source of supply. In fact, they had to specifically make sure that they weren't stocking things in a warehouse, because that's counting on fear. God is the answer from beginning to end. So if we've got the enlightenment, we have the substance, we've identified whatever it is the topic is, then what does there have to be? Structure and system. Now those are two different sources, because system requires mental activity, but structure is a foundation that is static. That's principle. A static foundation, and the system that operates it is from mind. And a static foundation has to be in balance or it won't last. And principle is eternal, so it is not going to be made up of something that is fragile. Once we have our enlightenment so we can see what's going on, we know that our substance is going to last forever. We know how to identify properly. We've got a structure, and we've got a system from mind that's going to work with the structure. So then what do we have to do? We have to reflect the qualities of God. We have to live them. We've got everything right in front of us. Now we have to live them. We have to give it life. It can't be static. I bought a home one time. Well, more than one time. But the fellow that sold it to us wanted to come and see how it looked after we got everything in and were living in it. So we invited him over. He said, you've done to this home exactly what I didn't do. He said, you gave it life. He was traveling all the time. He was too busy to enjoy the home. He said, you've given it life. And that's what makes the difference of how beautiful it is now. And it was just kind of stayed before. It was just static. Plain Jane. Let's suppose that we've taken piano lessons for many years. And we practice all the time. But we never perform. We never share what we've learned with our skill and our talent. Is that living the music? Nope. We have to live it. Practice is for practicing. Performance is to show that we have perfected something. It's with any topic you can think of, not just music, not just an instrument of piano. It's the concept you have to understand. That we have to bring to life everything we learn as we learn it. It's been often said that if you really want to learn something, teach it. And if you don't really have any experience with that, you say, well, how can I teach it if I'm just learning it? It forces you to dig deeper. That's what. You feel a sense of responsibility. That you've got to teach, you know, a couple individuals or 5 or 10 or whatever the capacity is of the situation. You have to appreciate it and you've got to live it. And then you got to make sure that you stay on track. That's truth. And then you have to appreciate it, which is love. We have a wonderful opportunity. We have all the tools. All we have to do is use them. We have to make it our own. We can't just read or benefit from someone else's work. If one receives a healing in Christian Science, should they be grateful for it? How's the best way to show it? To learn and practice it yourself. That's the best way to show it. Now, obviously, you should do the normal thing and thank whoever was involved in bringing it about. But the real key is to understand that you're not going to go anywhere in life when someone else performs a healing and is successful. They are the ones that gained the growth in their experience, not you. You just had something that was given. And you've clearly recognized that it was given. The order was still there. It was incomplete. The practitioner finished her work, or his work. But how about the patient? They didn't even get started. However, if you did get started, then you are extending the benefit from a temporary band-aid to the beginning of a permanent, independent way of living, where you're cultivating that you don't have to be dependent upon anything walking on two legs. You're going to be dependent on only the laws of God, which cover the universe in every aspect, under every condition, every time, every place. Now, where can you go and buy something like that? Where can you rent it? Where can you pay for a consulting service? It does not exist. It does not exist. The only place it exists is within your consciousness when you have recognized that you want to be a part of the real universe. You want to be a part of reflecting God. You want to be a part of nurturing your own part of infinite progression, leading to concrete being. That's your own. You have to do it. No one can do it for you. When I was new in science, I didn't understand what it meant. When Mary Baker Eddy said, you will have problems crop up other places. In other words, if you don't take up the study yourself, if you have a healing, and that's the end of your experience. She said, you'll have problems in other places. Because you're acting like a mortal. Mortals have problems all the time. You're going to have a difficult time finding one that tells you that they are absolutely satisfied with everything about their life. They're probably blind, deaf, and dumb. They're blind to the truth. They're not listening to what you're saying. And they don't know enough about it to even talk about it. That's blind, deaf, and dumb. It's easy to delegate something, and if they really do their job, you will benefit. But if you're not involved, and if you don't take a look at what they did that you delegated to them, and make sure you understand that everything was done in accordance with what you had instructed, where you're making it your own, then you're not going to be able to fully appreciate what was done. That's just in a business situation. But it applies to every part of our life. It applies to our relationship. If we're married, with our spouse. Every relationship we have. With our family, if we have a family. With our business associates. With anyone we have a relationship with whatsoever. You have a relationship with the clerk when you check out. You may ignore it. You may take it for granted. But as long as you have an opportunity to have contact with another human being, you have a relationship with them. And you have an opportunity to glorify God. As Mary Baker Eddy says about moments, she said the difference between success and failure is often due to how you use the moment. How are we using it? Are we trying to capture everything so we don't lose it? Time only presents itself once. And if we don't use it at the moment, we've lost it. You can't make it up. You can't work twice as hard tomorrow and make up what you missed today. Because you could have worked twice as hard tomorrow anyway, and instead of starting at a lower foundation because we messed up and didn't use our time properly, you could have started at a higher foundation, which would have been a foundation based on the extra things you learned for the day. But if you didn't learn anything, you're not going to gain. Let's look at these other definitions of God. On page 587 in the glossary, God is defined as the great I am. Do you know what great means? Look it up. You're going to be surprised. Have you ever said, I am this or I am that? This says God is the only I am. He told Moses, I am that I am. And we're going around saying, I am this, I am that. Or I did this, I did that. We use the word I, the letter I, often. The wise man says little and does much. The foolish man is the reverse. He says a lot and he does little. If you look up the definition in the glossary of ego, or the word I, just the one letter I, it may enlighten, especially if we have mind turned on, our alert system. And we're benefit if we have our filter system where the door is open to let it into consciousness. So we understand what God is. And that helps us to understand what man is. And to understand why mortal man is fallible. So, after God is the great I Am, then what? All-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. And then comes the seven synonymous terms in a little different order. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. All substance, intelligence. Now, why does he put this in a different order for the seven terms? Principle. If you've got a definition, and that's what this is in the glossary, which is the definition of it, whereas the recapitulation is a summary of what was stated in the first 13 chapters. So there she emphasized the development of thought. And she developed it through 13 chapters before she ever gave you the summary, which is chapter 14. Now something is very interesting about this chapter 14. It came from a book that she wrote in her very early stages of her own thought of development of Christian Science. And she entitled it, The Science of Man. And originally she thought that man was God. Because throughout the Bible it talks about all these qualities of man. So she thought that must mean God. But it was later that it was revealed to her of what soul was. And that soul was how we identify things. And that spirit is the opposite of matter, and that's what is absolutely flawless. And so what does it do? If it's flawless, it reflects, and that enables the multiplication. So we start with structure, and then we go to mind, then soul, and then spirit, and then life, truth, and love. So principle is balance and harmony, and we have to have that first if we're talking about structure. Principle. And then mind, it lights up the principle. Spirit, make sure that you're only dealing with spiritual substance, a substance of spirit. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, and then life, truth, and love. Then you give it the activity. Then you stay on track. Then you nurture it to completion. So they both have their logic on why the order is different. She only states these definitions once. She refers to part of the definitions throughout the whole textbook. But she only states the complete definition once for each of the two types in the book, the textbook. The definition refers to place. It says mind, and then it says omnipresent, idea in place. If mind is omnipresent, and mind is the source of ideas, then every idea has to be omnipresent. It doesn't belong to anyone. Not a single idea belongs to anyone. Everything belongs to God. Our part in this is to recognize exactly the nature of anything we want to think about or study or act out in life, and make sure we're always staying on the side of spirit and not letting our mind wander into that nebulous thing called matter. Because there's not a single benefit in focusing on matter. Even when we deny that it exists, it's done quickly. We don't dwell on it. On that same page is the definition of exactly what that Pharisee called Jesus, and that was good. It states the following. Good. God. Spirit. Omnipotence. Omniscience. Omnipresence. Omniaction. And we know from other readings that omniscience means it's all intelligence, all wisdom, and all knowing. And not only that, it's omni, each of those. And omni means one, only, and all. Think about that. There's only one. So God can't give it away. He has it there to be reflected. We can reflect as much of it as we want, and there's no limit. Because the source doesn't dwindle. In fact, the source actually expands. Because when we reflect something we learn of God, and it's really true blue, it expands by multiplying out into the atmosphere of thought. Instead of just being the original seed from the laws of the universe, it's that supplemented by every single individual that has absolutely understood it enough to reflect it out into the universe of spirit. That's why we can never reach the infinite. Not only does the word infinite define itself as being unreachable, because there's no limit to it, but if we think that that word came about by a matter of reflection, then we know that a human can never reach it. But we can have a lot of fun trying. And that's what Mary Baker Eddy says. Infinite progression is concrete being. Infinite progression. That's the only thing that is substantial. Making progress. If we don't make progress, we lose it. Because Earth is rotating at 25,000 miles an hour. I think it comes out to what? 1041 or something an hour? 1,041 miles an hour. So we can't stand still, or we're going to be left in the dust. The dust. D-U-S-T. Dust. We don't want to be left in the dust. We want to benefit from the knowledge that we have gained of spiritual facts and build on it. In order to do that, what do we have to do? We have to teach it. Who are we going to teach it to? Our consciousness. When we start teaching our own consciousness through the process of human reasoning, because Mary Baker Eddy says that's the most powerful faculty that a human has, and that enables us to eventually reason ourselves out of the mortal into the immortal. And that's what Jesus did. He lived the life of mortality. And then he took step by step by step over the bridge until he could finally cut the cord and say, "Sorry, disciples, I'm going up." And only John was qualified to go up. The others were traitors. How about Mary Baker Eddy? Everybody around Mary Baker Eddy were traitors. She didn't even have a John. Everyone. Every single one was a traitor. Why do I say that? Because when she passed on, even her household who lived with her and she taught them how to breathe, utilizing spirit instead of matter, they were threatened by the board of directors that if they even talked about Mary Baker Eddy, or if they wrote anything about her, or what they learned from her, that they would be excommunicated from the church. What did they do wrong? They didn't read the definition of church. It's in the Science and Health. I think it's page 583. We have it on our home page. It's so important. Not only our home page, we have it on the in the header. That means it's on every page because the header is the same page, the same on every page in our website. Because when we put something in there, I want everyone to see it. Yes, that's the fact. And what does it say? I'm not going to read it all to you, but just take a look at it. I'm only going to give you two or three points. It's very short, but you got to have some reason to go to the website. It says a church is that institution which affords proof of its utility. Does a bureaucracy prove the benefits of its utility? The opposite. A bureaucracy is the opposite. It takes away independent thinking. It controls people. That's what a bureaucracy is. That's the opposite of the true definition of church. A church is not a bureaucracy. It is not a building. It is not a membership of humans. It is not a bunch of humans getting together and studying. Mary Baker Eddy put a stop to that real quick when she came out with the Bible lesson and disbanded the use of pastors. She was encouraging individual study. And then if you go to church on Sunday, she was giving you an opportunity to contemplate it as it was being read by someone else, the first reader of the church. And we don't need a church to do that. We have a consciousness. Read it to our consciousness. Listen to it. Talk about it to ourselves. Think about it. And record every healing you have, because you will find that it will be very valuable for you to have a log of all your healings. And remember, there's two kinds, preventative and curative. Preventative, boy, that's a sweet one. That's sweeter than the curative. Why? Because we prevented it from having any influence on our life. If we're guided to do anything, I know someone that was guided to take a particular route. He was out shopping, errands, and to take a particular route and go back there because they were assembling things he was buying, and then go back there and pick them up. And it was a different path than what he would have taken, because he would have originally taken it, or maybe originally he would have done it last and not prepared it. And if he would have done that, he would have missed meeting someone that became a mutual benefit in their lives. Someone that he had met before, only in the last week or two. And the guy did him a great favor. He had a problem with his vehicle, and the guy showed him where he could get the part that he needed to have it fixed, and it was all done in short order. And so when he was at this place to pick up what he had already asked them to put together, the guy was there. He only lived two or three doors down the street. Amazing. I mean, the guy was only there like a minute or two to just pick up the bag of that had all the things in it that they were assembling for him. So they ended up meeting. And the one person really needed what he had to offer, and he really needed what they had to offer, him and his wife. It was a service that he was in need of, and they had a need of a job. It was a beautiful mutual benefit. That's a preventative healing. He didn't go into a need of lack, because he found the supply at the same time that he had discovered his need. Can we always be in our right place? And what do we need to do to be in our right place all the time, if that's possible? Well, number one, it's possible. And number two, what we have to do is to align ourselves with the laws of the universe. We cannot accept any concept that anything or anyone can ever be out of place, because we're all individual ideas of God. And God represents perfection, not imperfection. He represents supply and demand as one. There's no absence. There's no gap. There's no open vacuum. It's all one. All of these kinds of thoughts help us to fortify our consciousness so that we prevent problems and have faster cures. This can be applied to anything or anyone. An event may seem to be missing something. Suppose there was great preparation for something that was important, and it was very poorly attended. That wouldn't be the case if the correct approach on preventative would have been applied. We really should not do anything at all without wrapping it in the qualities of God. And of course, love is an easy one, because that's exactly what it is. It is creating the atmosphere that penetrates everything unlike itself. It can dissolve the absolute most onerous. There cannot be a single idea of God that is out of place. Not a single one. Everything has its right place, and nothing can prevent it from being there already. It doesn't have to go anywhere. Only our thought needs to be recognizing the truth about omnipresence, because the right place is within consciousness. And if it's anyone that affects us or that we have an impact on, think about an animal, a pet that may be missing, a child. You go shopping and you let go of its hand, small child, and it went off running in a busy place. It could even be outside. This idea can be used under every circumstance, all the time, regarding every single activity. Every step that is required to have a successful healing is outlined, enumerated in detail, in a presentation entitled Effective Healing. And we have three more presentations that are related to it, called How to Heal Everything. And the problem with most people is they think they are inferior and cannot be a genius. What do you think a genius is? If you know who the wealthiest man in the world is, you know about one. If you know who the President of the United States is, you know who another one is. What's different about them? There's one very specific thing that is different about them and anyone that is not a genius. It's that they recognize something that is worthwhile, high quality, that will benefit humanity, and they determine a plan that will bring it to fruition from start to finish, and they have the gana, the internal fortitude, the intestinal fortitude, to work through the plan step by step and never give in, give out, let down, quit, or anything else that slows down or stops or reverses or destroys where they are. Have you ever seen a stray dog? Cats are a little bit harder to detect because they're more independent. They can climb trees. They can capture their food. But dogs are really so much more dependent on a human. We should always have a couple tools ready to go. And they're portable. Mary Baker Eddy says, we are barraged constantly with distractions from our infinite progression. So out of 100 people, how many people do you think have a good idea and they have a desire to follow through with it and never start it? Almost everyone. You might have one, but you will probably need to increase the size of your sample to greater than 100, like to 1,000. If you did 1,000, you might have one individual, or you might have to go to 10,000 before you find one individual that actually creates a plan, begins it, and finishes it. Because most people, even after they begin it, they don't finish it. That's why it's a genius that follows through. That's why the wealthiest man in the world is a genius. Not because he was born with any special talents, but because he follows through. There's many people that are born with special talents, special IQs and everything else, but they do nothing with it. In fact, Thomas Edison made his wealth from finishing projects that other people started. You know, he didn't create hardly anything. He finished projects that other people had the idea of, and they got it started. And then he picked it up and brought it to conclusion. And that's the same way with our president. You know, he had the idea. He made the plan. And he took it from beginning to the final end. And also, he makes a very important statement in his The Art of the Deal book that he's famous for. And that is that if you think about the money, he says you will always fail. He says you can't think about the money. You got to think about the deal. That's why he calls his book The Art of the Deal. He doesn't call it How to Make Money. It's The Art of the Deal. It's really a science. It's not an art. It's a science. It's a science because there are laws that you need to follow. And if you follow those laws, then it will be brought to success. If you want to go to a medical doctor and he gives you an opinion that you don't like, chances are you're going to go to another doctor and get another opinion. That's very common in the medical industry. That proves right there that it's not a science, but it's an art. It's not based on facts, it's based on theory. The only thing that is really reliable is science. And it's a science that are based on the laws of God, not anything else. One of the most brilliant Christian Science practitioners that ever blessed us with his presence, he was a genius. He followed things from beginning to end. And that is Frederick L. Rawson, Rawson. The reason he was a genius is because he also, like the wealthiest man in the world, looked on how to solve problems that nobody had solved. And one of them was time travel. He could heal someone based on when they first discovered they had a problem. Doesn't matter how many years or decades ago it was. They could have had a problem for 50 years. He could go back and heal it when they first discovered they had a problem. Now, he doesn't say this, but it's pretty easy to think of just how that worked, and that is that I would say that everything was erased in the memory of the individual from that time forward. So any aggravations he went through during that period of time that he had the problem was erased from memory. And I think it's very possible it would have been erased from memory of anyone else that knew about him, you know, like close family or friends or whatever. And he started his treatment with the words that everything is possible to God, or nothing is impossible. Because if you start off that way, you are opening the door to the infinite. You're yielding to something that you are convinced has no limitation. And when you do that, you open the door to being able to accomplish more than what you could if you limit your thought. Since God is omnipresent, it is impossible for there to be anything out of place, because the laws of God are always operating. They're everywhere. Think of going down a highway that has a speed limit sign. Maybe it's got one at the middle. Maybe it's got one every mile, every 10 miles, 20 miles, whatever. It's going to have a reminder so that you can't forget it. Repetition is how you win when you have to retrain your so-called brain. You don't accept anything that is less than perfect. But the brain is not used to that. It is used to whatever it thinks it knows. It could be totally false. But it's very difficult to change it unless you have repetitious input that is the truth. Then it will finally yield to the truth. But you have to do some serious work, some serious thinking about it. Reason out. Reason your way out of the lie into truth. As Mary Baker Eddy says, and it was repeated in this treatment already, and that is that you reason because reasoning is the most potent human factor. Because you're going step by step. You're training the brain step by step. You can't just all of a sudden blast it with something totally the opposite of what it is believed to be true. If you've had a problem for a long period of time, it believes that to be true. I had a good friend one time that told me that a practitioner told him that we have to renew every day our problems in order to remember them. Think about that. If you cut out the renewing of what you thought yesterday about a problem and instead replaced it with something that you learned that you want to refer to, like Mary Baker Eddy says, have some tools, have some thoughts readily available. She says we should build up a model that we individualize ourselves and refer to that model whenever anything comes up that is contrary to perfection. Anything at all that is ungodlike, immediately switch to thinking about that model. M-O-D-E-L, model. Well, you could also be thinking of M-O-T-T-O, motto, motto, motto or model, with or without the D. They both can be applied. But it's the repetition. Because we're being reminded all the time that we have the problem. If there's an appearance to it every time we look in the mirror, if there's a feeling to it, Wentworth Winslow has a wonderful thing to say about that. is that if you've got a pain in your body somewhere, he said, don't ever repeat it. Don't ever give it the power that you're giving it a home. And don't ever try to analyze it. Because he says, if you do, then you'll get something else a few minutes later, or an hour later, or whenever. Because you have no facts. When you say something like that, that it's this or that or whatever, it's something that you apparently have heard or seen it on a public media, maybe a television or a show or something. If they're trying to sell cough medicine, man, they got the worst coughing appearance on that, on the screen that you can imagine. If they want to convince women that they should drink, they'll show a beautiful woman taking a drink of some strong alcoholic drink. Same with smoking. Terrible. People are hooked on it. They probably try it because it looks like a novelty. I don't know how they could breathe. I tried it one time when I was about 12 years old. Me and a neighbor. The neighbor had parents that smoked. So he could go up there and get a pack of cigarettes from the little local, you know, country store, because they knew him and his parents. And he and I went out and went underneath a bridge, small bridge on this small country road, and we smoked part of them. I couldn't stand it. I mean, I choked on it. I couldn't figure out how anybody would want to feel that way. But they put this nicotine in there, and if they can get you to just try one cigarette, probably, that, you know, you get this drug in you, and it says, I got to have another one. And it gets to the point that you overlook the suffering and pain and just do it because you're hooked. That should be illegal. I don't know, maybe it is now. I mean, we were about, I think around 12 years old, right? Like the sixth grade of school. I never wanted to touch one. Of course, I've never been inclined to, you know, drink or smoke or any of that kind of stuff anyway, because our family was the opposite. We studied our lesson every day, went to church, so we didn't really have a loose time to go out and, you know, loiter. Well, we got to remember, never ever give up, never ever give in. Stick with the standard. Build a model. Stick with it. Know that the only thing that is all, A-L-L with a capital A, is whatever is God-like. If it's not God-like, it's not all. I'll give you an example of how you can use, as a closing prayer, the scientific statement of being. We've been emphasizing how science is important as opposed to art or theory. And the textbook is just full of science, as are her other 16 books. But we have to be able to recognize it and use it and apply it. I will first recite the scientific statement of being, and then I will go through it and break it down and substitute words so you understand what I'm talking about. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is real, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. So our topic is omnipresent mind. Every idea is in place because of that. The one infinite mind is omnipresent. Nothing can be out of order with mind because it is omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. It's of the substance of spirit, which is flawless. It identifies everything properly because it is also interacting with soul. Everything is structured, no chaos, because it interacts with principle. You see, every one interacts with every other one of the seven. It is full of life because mind cannot be stayed or inactive or passive. And life assures that the qualities of God are being lived. And truth assures that we're going to stay on track. And love nurtures everything to completion. So keeping those in mind, let's look at the first sentence, the first key point. There's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind in its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Now we can supplement that by saying there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter because the only substance is spirit. Spirit is omnipresent. Because all of God's qualities are omnipresent, God is omni-intelligent. So God could not be ignorant. Therefore, God could not be yielding to matter. God knows nothing about anything unlike itself. God doesn't yield to anything. God is. God is. The next phrase is, after there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter, all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. So we can say if God is infinite mind, then God is everywhere. So there's no place where anything can be out of order. There can be no chaos. There can be nothing lost. Nothing out of place. Because God is principle. Put that in there. God is principle, which is structure. And the structure is of the substance of spirit, which is flawless. The whole existence, all existence, is in the structure of principle. Nothing can be out of place when there's a structure of principle, because principle is balance. Principle is harmony. There's no chaos in it at all. There cannot be. Or it wouldn't be principle. Now there has to be a manifestation in order to have a God. So God is both the source and the manifestation, and it's all one. The source includes the manifestation. Otherwise, the source couldn't be a source. The manifestation could not be a manifestation if it didn't have a source. And the source couldn't be a source unless it had a manifestation. So we have to know that the only source is God and the only manifestation is the manifestation of God. So it has to be reflecting the harmony of God. So there can't be anything out of place because that would mean that there were chaos. There can't be any chaos in the kingdom of God. And then the next is spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal air. And you can say, well, there can't be any matter at all. If it's air, that means it's not in existence. It cannot be in existence. The only thing that can be in existence is spirit, because that's the only substance. If it's not a substance of spirit, it cannot exist. So chaos cannot exist. Therefore, nothing can be misplaced. Nothing can be out of place. Nothing can be lost. There can't be any pet lost. There can't be a child lost that is walking with its parents and they let go of it for some reason. Maybe they're shopping and they're picking up something to look at. Nothing can be out of place because nothing has power. That's another thing. Mind is omnipotent. Mind is omnipotent. So what power is there going to be that can create chaos that can make something out of place. There is no power that can do it, because the only power is in accordance with principle. And how about life? Can life have any mistakes? No, because it has to abide by principle. It has to be principled, because they interact with each other. Your life has to be intelligent, because mind is all intelligence. Your life has to have identity, because soul is identity. And it's permanent, because the only substance of soul is spirit. So the spiritual senses, which is the way we identify with seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, that all has to be permanent and fixed and coordinated, harmonious, without any flaw. So nothing can be out of place, because the only place there is the place that is created by principle. So everything in life has to be balanced and harmonious, because principle is always operating. And truth keeps everything from staying on the track. Nothing can get off the track. There can't be any accident. There can't be any injury. There can't be any deviation from the truth. It is the one and only source. There is no other source. Then comes love. Love is the atmosphere that permeates everything there is, and there is no problem that can resist the lubricant of love. Because the lubricant of love is the oil of inspiration, the oil of harmony, no discord whatsoever in love. Everything is smooth, operating perfectly. God is all there is. There is nothing else. And God is always perfect. That means everything that exists is perfect, because everything that exists is a reflection of the one and only God. The next phrase is, spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Now, why does it say matter is temporal? Because it appears to be real in belief. That's why it has a place in this prayer. Spirit is the real and eternal. That's a reminder. Matter is the unreal and temporal. That's a reminder. Someone thinking on a relative basis. Someone thinking that they have a problem, or they see a problem that someone else has, or they've been told about it, or they read about it, or they heard it. Maybe they heard two cars smashing into each other. We're not going to accept anything, whether it comes by supposedly visual, audio, or any other way. There is only one option, and that is truth. Mind, spirit, soul, principle, and love. Because its opposite is nothing. That's the only thing that is real. Nothing is unreal that is true. Truth is real. Everything unlike truth is unreal. Spirit is real. Its opposite is unreal. Mind is real. Its opposite, mortal mind, is unreal. Soul, spiritual sense, is real. Material senses are unreal. Principle of chaos is unreal. Principle of harmony and balance is real. Life that is an intelligent life, that's real. Life that is in ignorance, a life of ignorance, is unreal. Truth, same thing. If it has any deviation from the truth, it's unreal. If it has any element of error in it, it's unreal. If it's true, then it is spiritual. It is perfect. It's flawless. And life, truth, leads to love. Love is perfect. no flaw. If we dwell on this line of thinking, it is impossible for there can be anything unlike God that can persist. Truth always wins. Error, evil, has no foundation. It's built on sand. Swish, one wave of water and it cleans it, levels it totally, makes it disappear. One last closing thought is that Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour of the day, whatever it was, could have been 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, to make sure that she was not absorbing attacks that were on her, but she was reflecting out the truth, denying that anything had power except truth, denying that anything except perfection had truth or power or presence. And she absolutely refused to think ill will about anybody for any reason, doesn't matter what they did or what they're doing, even at the moment. We shall close with just a short phrase that Frederick L. Rawson voiced when he saw a cart full of rocks dumped on top of a man, because the animal raised up at the very time he went back to examine the tailgate. This was back 110 or 15 years ago, when they didn't have any motorized trucks that took a big load of heavy rocks. These are the words of a true Christian Science practitioner genius and author and discoverer of the relationship between time and nothingness. There is none, because both are unreal. These are the words by Frederick L. Rawson. There is nothing but God. Amen. It is Friday, August 21, 2026, at 17:02 on the 24-hour clock, 5:02 p.m. for a 12-hour clock. The title to this prayer treatment is One Mind, Omnipresent, Idea in Place, meaning every idea is in place, because God is omnipresent, because God is mind, and mind knows all, is all wisdom, and all intelligence, and comprised of spirit, which is flawless. Amen. Thank you for listening to this extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, MBEInstitute.org. The end.